Lord Peter Wimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter, with Charlotte Mitchell as the Dowager Duchess, and Gabriel Wolfe as Chief Inspector Parker. Strong Poison by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted in 6 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 4, Miss Murchison. Lord Peter Wimsey is attempting to prove the innocence of Harriet Vane, who is awaiting retrial for the murder of her ex-lover, novelist Philip Boys. His investigations have, however, now been interrupted by Christmas, which he's spending, as usual, at Duke's Denver, with the family and various friends, including Mrs. Freak Dimsworthy, Captain Tommy Bates, and Miss Titterton.
And is it true, Lord Peter, dear, that you're defending this frightful poisoning woman?
I am endeavouring to secure Miss Vane's acquittal, Mrs. Dimsworthy. I would have thought it somewhat previous to refer to her...
Peter, dear.
Yes, Mother?
Have another cup of tea.
All right, her.
The Vane case, eh? Well, I've no doubt she did it, Freak here. And I must say, I don't blame her. Perfectly foul blighter, that Boys. Had his photograph on the dust cover of his book, you know. That's the sort of squit he was.
Oh, but he was a very fine writer, Tommy. His books are positively Gallic in their audacity and restraint.
I wouldn't have the muck in the house. I caught Hilda with it, and I said, now you send that book straight back to the library. I don't interfere, but one must draw the line somewhere.
How do you know what it was like, Tommy?
Why, James Douglas's article in the Express was good enough for me. The paragraphs he quoted were filthy. Positively filthy.
Well, it's a good thing we've all read them, then. Forewarned is forearmed, right?
Oh, yes, we owe a great debt of gratitude to the press, you know. So kind of them to pick out all the plums for us and save us the trouble of reading the books, don't you think? And such a joy for the poor, dear people who can't afford 7 and 6 pence or even a library subscription, though I'm sure that works out cheaply enough if one is a quick reader. Not that the cheap ones would take those books, for I asked my maid. She's such a superior girl, and so keen on improving her mind, which is more than I can say for most of my friends. But no doubt it is all due to free education for the people, and I suspect her, in my heart, of voting Labour. Though I never asked, because I don't think it's fair. No. And besides, if I did, I couldn't very well take any notice of it, could I?
I don't see why not, Duchess. Tommy, surely you're not suggesting that the Vane woman murdered Philip Boys because of his books?
Yeah, because of her own, more likely. I think the whole thing's a publicity stunt gone wrong. Now, it'll be a case of hanging the goose that lays the golden eggs, what? Well, unless Wimsey can pull off one of his conjuring tricks, of course.
Oh, I do hope you do, Lord Peter.
So do I, Mr. Titton. What's more, I really think I might. With the help of others, naturally.
Help? Oh, Peter has all these marvellous women to assist him, you know.
Women? What women, Duchess?
Women detectives. Only, of course, they're not real detectives, you know. Oh, no. They're not sleuths like Peter, that is, or policemen like Charles Parker, bless him. They're organised by a Miss Kimpson. She runs a type-in bureau in West London, only it isn't a type-in bureau at all, of course, although it has to take on occasional work to keep up appearances. But most of the time, do you see, the females who work there are employed answering shady advertisements in the newspapers and chasing up blackmailers and white slavers and the most appalling scoundrels and bringing them to justice. It's so exciting.
Mother.
Yes, dear. Oh, I see, yes, of course. Yes, well, Peter's very reticent about them, you see. But they do so much good work. I'm sure he's very proud of them, really. They're all what are known as superfluous women. I mean, such an unfair word. Quite cruel, really. But they're most certainly not superfluous anymore. What do you call your women, dear? What's the name you have for them?
Look, Mother, please.
Your Cattery, that's it. It's his Cattery. Meow. It's so amusing. Oh. Although, of course, one wouldn't be so indiscreet as to use the term in their presence.
Of course not. But do tell us, Lord Peter, what this Miss Vane is like. Have you talked to her?
I saw in the papers that she'd had hundreds of offers of marriage.
Out of one noose, into the other. What?
You know, Tommy, there are times
Peter.
When... Yes, Mater.
I do wish, dear, you'd go and see what's happened to Gerald. Tell him his tea's getting cold.
Righto, Mother. But I won't be back for a while, if you don't mind. I want to have a chat with Freddy about the case. Stocks and shares angle, don't you know? He's an ass about everything else, but he does seem to understand them.
You're very well, dear.
Oh, dash it. Never could play billiards. Off you go, Whimsy.
Thank you.
What do you know about the Megatherium Trust, Freddy?
Megatherium? Well, it crashed 3 years ago. Lots of money lost on all sides. What's the Meg got to do with your murder hunt?
I don't know. Possibly nothing. But the most hopeful theory so far is that Philip Boyce committed suicide because of financial difficulties. He doesn't appear to have known much about money, so it's possible he relied on the advice of his cousin, Norman Urquhart.
Oh, the sleek family lawyer chappy.
Yes. Well, I've now got a spy in Mr. Urquhart's office. A Miss Murchison from my cattery, don't you know? And a very observant woman she is. She overheard a phone call last week, and put in two and two together, she thinks it's likely Urquhart was involved with Megatherium. No evidence, you understand, just suspicion.
So, do you think Boyce could have tried his hand at a bit of speculating and lost a packet?
Well, if he did, it would explain a lot. He knew he wasn't going to get anything when his rich old great-aunt died because Urquhart's shown me a draft of her will and she cut him off without a penny. Though I may say that draft is not above suspicion itself for reasons which I won't bore you with.
But is there any evidence that he could have committed suicide, Peter? Did he have any arsenic?
I don't know. But he was seen in a Bloomsbury pub on the night in question, tipping a white powder into a glass of water. Chief Inspector Parker is meant to be looking for the packet now. But I'd like you to investigate the city end, if you would. Ask discreet questions about Urquhart and the Megatherium and so forth, could you?
Oh, absolutely. Delighted to be of assistance and all that.
Ah, thanks. Talking of Parker, I suppose I'd better have a brotherly word with Mary when she arrives.
Mary? I say, Whimsy, what's she got to do with it?
Yeah. Yes, well, never you mind, Freddy. Never you mind. I say, Mary, do you say anything of old Parker these days?
I've had dinner with him once or twice when I was in town.
Have you? He's a very decent sort. Reliable, homespun, that sort of thing. Not amusing, exactly.
A little solid.
Yes, you say, a little solid. I should hate anything upsetting to happen to Parker. He'd take it hard. I mean to say, it wouldn't be fair to muck about with his feelings and so on.
Worried, Peter?
No. But I'd rather like him to have fair play.
Well, I can't very well say yes or no until he asks me, can I?
Can't you?
Well, not to him. We'd upset his ideas of decorum, don't you think?
Yes, I suppose it would. But it would probably upset them just as much if he did ask you. He would feel that the mere idea of hearing a butler announce Chief Detective Inspector and Lady Mary Parker would have something shocking about it.
It's stalemate, then, isn't it?
You could stop dining with him.
I could do that, of course.
And the mere fact that you don't. I see. Would it be any good if I demanded to know his intentions in the true Victorian manner?
Why this sudden thirst for getting your family off your hands, old man? Peter, nobody's being horrible to you, are they?
No. Oh, I'm just feeling rather like a benevolent uncle, that's all. Old age creeping on. That passion for being useful, which attacks the best of us when we're getting past our prime.
Like me with the house decorating. Oh, I designed these pyjamas, by the way. Don't you think they're rather entertaining? I expect Chief Inspector Parker prefers the old-fashioned nightgown. Never mind, I shall be brave and devoted. Here and now, I cast off my pyjamas forever.
No, not here and now. Respect a brother's feelings. But you tell me what I want to know. I am to inform my friend Charles Parker that if he will abandon his natural modesty and propose, you will abandon your pyjams and say yes.
Yes. Thank you, Peter.
Bravo, Lord Peter. That was delightful.
Thank you, Miss Murchison. Now then, let's get down to business. I find Bach good for the brain, don't you? Steady and influence and all that.
I quite agree. Well, you asked me to find out about the typewriter in Mr. Urquhart's office.
Yes?
It was bought new 3 years ago.
Was it indeed? So our Mr. Urquhart has got something to hide. Well, that's rather a blow to the boy's suicide theory.
I don't quite understand. What makes you think Mr. Urquhart has something to hide?
When I went to see him before Christmas, he offered, quite unnecessarily, to show me Mrs. Raven's will.
That's his great-aunt.
And Philip Boys' great-aunt, too, yes. He asked for Mrs. Raven's deed box to be brought in and pretended to search for the will, but then remembered that he'd left it at home. He invited me to call round the next morning, which I did, and lo and behold, there was the draft of a will. The only snag is that it was typed on a machine which you say is 3 years old, and yet it was dated 8 years ago.
Oh, good gracious. Do you suspect he typed it out himself that night?
Well, it looks rather like that, certainly.
But why?
I don't know. Either Mrs. Raven never made a will at all, or if she did, it's not along the lines of the one he showed me. Miss Murchison.
Yes?
What are your feelings about doing something illegal?
In a good cause?
In a very good cause.
I imagine that if I'm taken up, you will pay any necessary costs.
Certainly.
And if I go to prison?
I don't think it'll come to that. There's a slight risk, I admit, that you might be brought up for attempted theft or for being in possession of safe-breaking tools, but that is the most that could happen.
Oh, well, why not? It's all in the game.
You mean that?
Yes.
Splendid. Then what I want you to do is break into Mrs. Raven's deed box and look for the real will.
Do you want me to steal it?
No. Just try to memorize the chief points in it, especially the names of the chief legatee or legatees and of the residuary legatee. I particularly want to know whether anything was left to Philip Boys.
That seems quite straightforward, Lord Peter. Except for one thing. The deed boxes are all locked, and Mr. Urquhart carries the keys with him at all times.
Don't you know how to pick a lock?
Oh, not in the least, I'm afraid.
I often wonder what we go to school for. We never seem to learn anything really useful. Well, I suppose I'd better take you to an expert for some rather intensive training. Should you mind putting your coat on and coming round with me to see a friend? Oh, dear, we seem to have struck a meeting. Oh, well, it can't be helped. Let's go in and wait. That's our man, Miss Murchison.
The one with the face like a bulldog?
Yes.
Good Lord. Has he a name?
Now you mention it, I believe he has, but he's never called by it. It's Rum.
Oh, not very, perhaps, if he gives lessons in lockpicking.
I mean, his name's Rum.
Oh, what is it?
Dash it, I mean Rum is his name.
Oh, dear. Oh, I beg your pardon.
But he doesn't care to use it now that he's a total abstainer.
Then what does one call him?
Well, I call him Bill, but when he was at the head of his profession, they called him Blindfold Bill. In his day, he was the most accomplished burglar and safe-breaker in three kingdoms. I found him on my premises one night and struck up a sort of alliance with him. Took lessons from him and all that. He was a bit shy at first, but he got converted by another friend of mine, and the long and the short of it was, he gave himself up, took his medicine, and is now a very honest and excellent locksmith of the ordinary kind. Oh, hello, he spotted us.
Hallelujah, hallelujah, welcome one and welcome home. Brethren, here is a dear brother and sister in the Lord, as has come out of the aunts of the rich and the riotous living of the West End, to join us with singing the songs of Zion. Let us sing and give thanks. Hallelujah. We know that many shall come from the East and from the West, and sit down at the Lord's feast, while many that think themselves chosen shall be cast into outer darkness. Therefore, let us not say, because this man wears a shiny eyeglass, that he is not a chosen vessel, or because this woman wears a diamond necklace and rides in a Rolls Royce, she will not therefore wear a white robe and a gold crown in the new Jerusalem. Let us unite now in thanksgiving for heaven's mercies in hymn number 102. And Lord Peter, sir, I'll be with you in a moment.
What a friend we have in Jesus.
Well, Bill, as you see, I brought you a new pupil.
Good afternoon, Bill.
How do, miss? Always happy to serve you, sir, knowing as it's the Lord's work. Glory be.
That's right. Now, Bill, I've got my eye on a solicitor's deed box.
Ooh.
This lady can get access to it if you can show her the way inside it.
If? Of course I can. There ain't a deed box in this here city what I couldn't open blindfold in boxing gloves and a stick of boiled macaroni.
I know, Bill, but it ain't you that's got to do it. Can you teach the lady how to work it?
Sure I can. What kind of lock is it, lady?
Oh, I don't know. An ordinary lock, I think. I mean, it has the usual sort of a key, not a Brahmer or anything like that.
Then half an hour will teach you all you want, miss. Now, let's see now. Glory, glory, daddy. Ah, here we are.
Oh, are those picklocks?
That's what they are, miss. Engines of Satan. Well, miss. The first thing is to understand the construction of the lock.
Oh, yes.
Now, just you look here. You holds up the spring, like so.
Yes.
And then you can thrust the catch back easy.
Oh.
Just use your vent.
Oh, thank you. So.
Very good, miss, very good. Now, the difficulty is, of course, that when the lock's in place, you can't use your eyes.
Oh, no.
No. But you has your hearing, and you has the feeling in your fingers given you by Providence Parise's name for that purpose. So, what you has to do, miss, is to shut your eyes and see with your fingers, like, when you've got your spring hooked back sufficient to let the catch go past, like... So.
Oh.
Have a go.
Oh, like this.
There's a bit more.
Oh,
a bit more.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, there.
Oh.
Well done, miss. Lord Peter, sir, I'll tell you something. We got a real cracksman in the making here, sir. A real cracksman.
So you managed to break into the box. Well done, Miss Murchison.
Oh.
Now calm down and tell me everything that happened from the beginning.
Oh, yes, Lord Peter. I'm so sorry, I'm rather excited. Well, I decided that the best time to attempt the job was after work, as there's always someone else in the office at lunchtime. So what I did was type out the first page of a very long affidavit incorrectly. That is, leaving out an important paragraph. Mr. Urquhart noticed it at once and was very cross, because it had to go round to another solicitor's before 10 the next morning. So I offered to stay on and retype it.
Having already done so, of course.
Quite so. Mm-hmm. I then waited until I was sure both Mr. Urquhart and Mr. Pond were safely on the tube, and then I got to work. Incidentally, the Rayburn box has been moved, I'm sure, in the last day or so, and was on a top shelf underneath four others.
How tiresome.
Extremely, because I had to stand on my chair to get it down, and I was in the process of doing this when I heard someone at the door.
Are you looking for something, Miss Murchison?
Oh, Mr. Pond. Oh, how you startled me. I thought you'd gone.
I presumed you had, too. I have merely returned to collect a little parcel I forgot. What is your business here at this time of night?
Oh, I had some extra typing to do.
left out a barely paragraph on page one. It would be page one, of course. And he wants the tripe round at Hanson's by 10 o'clock.
Yes, yes. Those machines make you careless. Ah, well, I must hurry along. Good night again, Miss Murchison.
Oh, good night.
Oh, by the way, were you looking for something?
Oh, yes, yes. I was looking for a mouse. I was just sitting working when I saw it run along the top of the cupboard and up into the wall behind those boxes.
Dirty little beasts. The place is overrun with them. I've often said we ought to have a cat here. No hope of catching it now, though. You're not afraid of mice, apparently.
Oh, no. In your day, I suppose all women were afraid of mice.
Yes, they were. But then, of course, their garments were longer.
Oh, rotten for them.
They were very graceful in appearance. And now, Miss Murchison, I beg you to step down from that chair and allow me to assist you in replacing those boxes.
Oh, there's no need, Mr. Pond.
Yes, there is, Miss Murchison.
I hope the whole operation wasn't plagued with interruptions like that, Miss Murchison.
Fortunately not. But I was worried that Mrs. Hodges, the cleaning lady, would shortly be in, so I had to be quick. I got the box down and then slipped into Mr. Urquhart's private office, where I couldn't be observed through the window. Oh, by this time my hands were cold and shaking, and I was not in the best condition to profit by Bill's instructions. So I took a few deep breaths and resolved not to hurry myself. I took one of Bill's keys, I slipped it into the lock, I turned it, whittled it for years, it seemed. I was scratching about aimlessly. Suddenly I felt the spring press against the hooked end. I felt the lever move, and then, click, the lock was open.
And inside the box?
Not a great many papers. No will. Not even a copy of a will. Two things only I thought interesting. One was a power of attorney dated January 1925, giving Mr. Urquhart full powers to act for Mrs. Raeburn.
Interesting. And the other?
A deed of trust, making over the whole of her property to him, in trust for herself, and providing that he should pay her personal expenses every year.
Very interesting. What was the date of that one?
July 1920. And there was a letter attached to it, a letter from Rosanna Raeburn to Norman Urquhart, in his capacity as her solicitor. And in it, she says that next time he comes to see her, she will give him instructions about her will.
So there is a will. Hmm. I wonder where it is.
Come in. Ah, Peter, come in. You come about Philip Boy's packet of powder?
Not this time. I don't suppose you'll hear anything more of that. I don't think it's suicide anyway, after all. No, old Parker Bird, it's, well, it's a rather more delicate matter. It's about my sister.
About Lady Mary?
Yes. Yes, I understand she's been going about with you, dining and all that sort of thing, what?
Oh. Lady Mary's honoured me on one or two occasions with her company. I didn't think she... Well, I didn't know if... That's how I understood it was...
But did you understand? That's the point. You see, Mary's a very nice-minded sort of girl, though I say...
I assure you, there's no need to tell me that. Do you suppose I should misinterpret her kindness? It's the custom nowadays for women of the highest character to dine unchaperoned with their friends and Lady Mary's.
Look, I'm not suggesting a chaperone. Mary wouldn't stick it for one thing, and I think it's all bosh anyhow. Sylvie and her brother and all that. Now, I suppose that it is my, so to speak, duty to push round and drop the helpful word here and there.
I see. Well, I suppose I ought not to have presumed to...
What did you presume, I think?
Nothing to which anybody could object. I mean, what are you thinking of, Whimsy? If you imagine I have ever said a word to her that couldn't be said with the greatest propriety...
In the presence of her mother, you wrong the purest and sweetest woman that ever lived and insult your friend. What a perfect Victorian you are, Charles. I should like to keep you in a glass case. Of course you haven't said a word. What I want to know is why.
What?
For the last 5 years or so, you have been looking like a demented sheep at my sister and starting like a rabbit whenever her name's mentioned. What do you mean by it? A man doesn't like to see a man go all wobbly about his sister. At least not with such a prolonged wobble. It's unsightly, it's irritating. Why not slap the manly thorax and say, Peter, my dear old mangle wurzel, I have decided to dig myself into the old family trench and be a brother to you. What's stopping you? Is it Gerald? He's an ass, I know, but he's not a bad old stick, really. Is it Helen? She's a bit of a wart, but you needn't see much of her. Or is it me? Now, come on, cough up the difficulty, old thing, and we'll have it removed from a plain van. Now then.
Do you... Are you asking me?
I am asking your intentions, damn it. And if that's not Victorian enough, I don't know what is.
But look here, Peter, don't be a damn fool. How can I ask your sister to marry me?
Well, how you do it is your affair. You might say, what about a spot of matrimony, old dear? That's up to date and plain and unmistakable. Or you could go down on one knee and say, will you honour me with your hand and heart, which is pretty and old-fashioned and has the merit of originality in these times. Or you could write, or wire, or telephone. But I leave that to your own individual fancy.
You're not serious.
Oh, God, shall I ever live down this disastrous reputation for tomfoolery? You are making Mary damned unhappy, Charles, and I wish you'd marry her and have done with it.
Making her unhappy? Me? Her unhappy?
God knows what you have between your ears. Wood, solid wood. But the last blow seems to have penetrated. Yes, you, her unhappy. Do you get it now?
Peter, if you really thought
now,
I could stand...
Don't go off the deep end. It's wasted on me. You keep it for Mary. I've done my brotherly duty, and there's an end of it. Now calm yourself and return to your reports.
Oh, Lord, yes, yes. Yes, before we go any further, I have got a report for you.
You have?
Yes.
Well, why didn't you say so at first?
You wouldn't let me.
Well, what is it?
We found the packet.
What?
We found the packet.
Actually found it?
Yes. One of the barmen...
Well, never mind the barmen. You're sure it's the right packet?
Yes, we've identified it.
Well, get on, get on. Have you analysed it?
They're doing that now.
Great Scott. And I've virtually given up the suicide theory. Oh, and now I'll have to resurrect it.
Why on earth did you give it up?
Because of Norman Urquhart's activities. Oh, I know it's been shown in court that he couldn't have poisoned boys, but his behaviour has been dashed suspicious. He's been so desperate to conceal Rosanna Raeburn's will, he actually faked a substitute to show me. Now, why? If boys committed suicide, what has he got to hide? Oh, good God. Of course.
Of course what?
Well, he didn't fake it for me. He faked it for boys.
No, I don't understand.
Listen. Rosanna Raeburn leaves her money to split between her two great nephews.
Yeah?
Urquhart knows this, and knowing Boyce's defeatist temperament encourages him to speculate in the Megatherium Trust. Megatherium crashes. Boyce, heavily in debt, comes to Urquhart, asks if he has any expectations from the old lady. Urquhart whips out fate will that shows he hasn't.
Oh.
Boys, in despair, goes to Bloomsbury Pub and takes fatal dose of arsenic. Urquhart collects both shares of Aunt Rosanna's fortune. Q.E.D.
Yes? Oh, yeah. I see. Thank you. They've analysed the contents of the packet.
And was it arsenic?
Bicarbonate of soda.
In that episode of Strong Poison, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael, Dowager Duchess, Charlotte Mitchell, Chief Inspector Parker, Gabriel Wolfe, Miss Murchison, Betty Huntley Wright, Lady Mary Wimsey, Mariah Aitken, Freddie Arbuthnot, Christopher Schooler, Mrs. Freak Dimsworthy, Margaret Guess, Bill Rum, Captain Tommy Bates and Pond, Peter Woodfall. Miss Murchison was adapted by Chris Miller from the book Strong Poison by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.